Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Joining me tonight is Dr. Patricia Shearer. How are you doing tonight, Patricia?
Oh, I'm just fine. It's nice weather here in Chicago, so.
Very nice. Yes, we can't complain over here in New York either. It's very nice over here. And it's at 5:30 Eastern time tonight. It's 4:30 by you, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Great. All right. Well, Patricia, why don't you take us back to a little bit of where you came from and, just give us a little bit of your background and upbringing and how you got to where you are today.
Okay. Well, I was born in Chicago and raised in Chicago till I was about 12 years old. And we had a war coming on. And my father was one of the first 13 radar engineers, and he had to go to New York, to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, to learn how to put radar on the ships. And so we moved, and I went to school in New York for a while. Then I went to Florida, and he put it up and down the Florida coast. And finally we came back to Chicago, where I graduated from high school and went to Northwestern University studied music for 2 years as a music major. I have had a lot of kind of trauma in my life in terms of people around me being very ill and having some pretty severe problems. My father died at 48 with multiple sclerosis. My daughter died at 48 with multiple sclerosis. So there was always something to be concerned about. But I had always been raised that the care of others is the major thing in your life. And I guess it really sunk in because that's what I decided I was going to do. I loved the music, and I felt like I could take the music and do something with it. And I took a course in speech also, because I liked public speaking and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they sent you to a school where children had speech problems. And I went to a school in Chicago that had a deaf program. And I sat in the classes and watched and listened and came out and thought, that's for me. I am going to do that.
Right.
I need to change my major. By this time, I was a little bit older anyway, and I knew I wasn't going to be the concert pianist I thought I wanted to be. So I switched, went back to Northwestern, finished my undergraduate, got a master's degree, and then got a PhD in clinical psychology and deafness. I was asked to remain there and was an associate professor for about 15 years. And a little funny story was, I was the first woman that they ever let into the graduate school. It was all men. And the man that would start the meeting would get up and take the gavel and tap it, on the podium and say, "Gentlemen." And then he'd look at me and say, "Oh, yeah, and gentle lady, too."
You're a pioneer.
So I was a little out of place, I felt like, but I learned to cope with that pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
Now,
and so from there, where did you go?
Well, from there, I stayed there, as I said, about 15 years, and began to become aware that deaf children don't have the same opportunities given to them in schools as do hearing children. Particularly, I really liked the arts, and they just didn't go to art class. They didn't have music. That would be, why would you give music to somebody who can't hear it? And I became very concerned about that and decided to set up an organization that I called the International Center on Deafness and the Arts. And the first thing I did was to do a play, and I made all the plays musical. And the first one that we did, there were about 8 deaf children in it. They were all from about 7 to 10 in age.
Okay.
And we did The Wizard of Oz. And the little girl that played Dorothy was amazingly talented. She was a talented child. And I saw that immediately, and I thought, oh, my goodness. And she was out, like on opening night, and she came out with the little basket that Dorothy had when she went tripping through the forest. And it had a checkered napkin on the top of it, and the napkin fell off in the middle of the floor of the stage. And I was standing in the wings, and I'm thinking, oh, she's only 7. What is she going to do? And she saw it on the floor, and I saw her pause, and she just skipped a circle around the napkin, scooped down and picked it up, and skipped off the stage. I thought, boy, she is talented. She's sharp. So she grew up, and many people know the name today of Marley Matlin, who won the Academy Awards. Yes.
Absolutely.
Only deaf person to ever win the Academy Award. So
wow.
That was really quite exciting for us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the feeling that you must have gotten must have been incredible.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. And I had so many opportunities given to me. Henry Winkler had
mm-hmm.
seen her, one of the other big programs that we ran in our center, was an international arts festival once a year. And kids sent in art, painting, drawing. They sent in theatrical performances, music, and creative writing. And we would pick the top 3 from all over the world in some different age categories and bring them in for a weekend where we would bring people who were deaf, who were talented and were in performance, and they would work with the kids, and it was really a wonderful, wonderful experience. Well, one time when we were doing that, Henry Winkler was in town, and I got this brainstorm, gee, would it be nice if he came and gave the kids their prizes? So I called his agent and told him, and he was there rehearsing for a movie of a family that had several adopted children, many of whom were disabled. And the agent said, oh, that's perfect for the movie. And he said, he'll be there. Well, he spent the entire day. He was wonderful, wonderful with those kids. Couldn't have been anything that was nicer for them. And when it was all over, he came to me and said, that little girl, now by that time, that little girl was 12, and she did a solo at that art festival because we wouldn't let our own kids enter into it. We figured that was biased and not a good idea, so she did a solo for entertainment. And he came and said, that child is really talented, and if she ever wants to follow it as a career, I'll be there for her.
Wow.
So when she auditioned for the movie, and they had auditioned so many people, and she got it instantly. She was 19, going off to California by herself, profoundly deaf, and he said, no, she's not. She's going to live with us. And they took her in the house and made her part of the family. And
wow.
When she got married in their house. So I got to go see the house of many colors of Henry Winkler.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, just a lot of wonderful experience because of that.
Sure.
So we did the arts for quite some time, and mm-hmm. we had another girl in it who was extremely bright, and she played the witch in Dorothy in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she was in 8th grade, and she started to behave strangely. And pretty soon she wasn't doing well in school, and she was having behavior problems, and they just didn't know what was wrong. And one Saturday, her mother called me on the phone and said, you've got to come over here. She is destroying the whole house, and she's looking at the TV, and she's seeing things on the screen that aren't there. So I went running over there, and sure enough, she was really, really disturbed.
Oh, no.
And I stayed with her. I called everywhere that I could think of with hospitals and things, and nobody would take a deaf child. Finally, one smaller hospital that had a large mental health unit for kids called me and said, if you will come with her, we will take her. And so I did. And we worked together with her, and finally she went back to school, graduated, and went on to high school, but she was pronounced bipolar as her diagnosis. And it took her quite some time to learn that she must take the medicine, how to handle the urges that she had and things. But today, she's married, she has a child, and she works for us. She works in the group homes that we have in the program that we started because of her, which we called Mental Health and Deafness Resources. And that's the second business that I run today. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of different aspects to it. It has group homes.
Mm-hmm.
It has a psychiatric unit in a hospital for inpatient when people... The kids are really sick.
Right.
In the group homes, they stay most of the year. It's a year-round school, but they'll go home and visit their families on some weekends and holidays and things like that. But they have different types of therapeutic activities that they do in the house, and we run a school. And the school is very individualized. Some of them have learning disabilities on top. And in the last 10 years, we now have deaf children that are also autistic, and we never had that before.
Wow.
So the big boom in autism was also seen in deafness, and it's just such a mystery.
Sure.
Well, about that made me, about 5 years ago, get interested in neuroscience. I had been doing a lot of reading, and I was reading about the value of brain scans and what you can tell by seeing a child's brain, particularly when they're trying to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out with an audiologist friend that I had, and we were just chatting, and I said to her, you know what I need? I need a neuroscientist. And she said, well, you've got one, my brother. And no, my nephew. It was her nephew, not her brother, her nephew. And I said, oh, really? So she introduced me to him, and we became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born in Poland, came over here when he was 13. And so he had a lot of acquaintances all over the world, in Europe, South Korea. And he would go these different places and help them understand the illnesses that are usually neurological in nature,
right,
and what you can do to improve the person's outlook and outcome for life. And I started going with him to Croatia, where there was an annual medical conference with many, many doctors from everywhere. And he would give a lecture on the brain, and I would follow it up with, well, now that we know what's going on, we know what we have to change and what we have to control, and this is the idea we came up with. And we'd use a variety of ideas. One time we took five deaf teenagers with us, and they did workshops showing how theater gave them an understanding of themselves, of life, of the language that people use and why they use it, that they would have never obtained had they not done that.
Right.
So that was very exciting.
Wow. And so, I mean, it sounds like you've done a lot of research over your career. I mean, obviously, you've dedicated yourself to really finding ways to make people view the idea of deafness and any sort of challenge, physical or mental challenge. You've really sought after different ways to prove to people that no, you know, there are people that can do anything.
Right. Right. And how much better for a civilization to have them maximizing their potential rather than being a person leaning on the government for support all of their life.
Absolutely.
It's wise in many different ways. It makes the person a better person, a happier person, and it's beneficial to everybody in the country.
Definitely. Absolutely. Now, for your personal experience in this, what would you say was, or who would you say could possibly be the most influential person that really led you on this path, that said, that made you stop and think and say, you know what, this is what I want to do with my life?
Well, you're going to be surprised at this one, I think. I happen to be the third cousin of Jane Addams. And my great aunt was the first cousin, and she knew her very well. And so I heard Jane Addams as I was growing up. And then as I got older, I thought, gee, maybe I ought to read a couple books about her and see what she did. And I started reading the books and realized she was doing almost what I was beginning to do, and was following the same pathway, finding children, finding what helped them, gave them a life, poverty off the streets and all, and that was a huge influence. The other, well, there's two other people. The one that really touched me personally was the person that headed my program at Northwestern University. He was the only, he was a hearing person in a family that had a deaf, other deaf child. So he grew up with a deaf brother, and he understood it completely. And he did many, many things, and one of them is what led me into music, application of music to deaf kids, because he felt that we could tell a learning disability or a learning problem in a deaf child if we could only see their brain wave with an EEG. Now, that was long before we had brain scans, many, many years before that. And I earned my way through my doctorate by taking these EEG waves with a micrometer of a ruler and measuring between each wave, because he was convinced that if you had a reading problem, it would look one way. If you had a math problem, it would look a different way.
Right.
So I had that in my head, that there was knowledge that we needed about the brain and its function to better understand these children. So that was a big influence for me. But the third person is a historical figure, and it's Beethoven. Beethoven
was
deaf.
That makes sense, though.
You know, he was deaf. He was deaf.
Absolutely.
And I started wondering, did he really compose music when he was deaf? How could he do that if he couldn't hear it? How did he make it up so that it was melodious? And I had a, I gained a friend who was a professional violinist in the Paris Symphony, and they did a lot of Beethoven, and he would was explaining to me something about the feeling and the listening and how Beethoven put his head down on the piano so the vibration would come to him. He was a real expert in what Beethoven had done, and I got really, you know, consumed with interest in that. And so I started listening to everything he ever wrote to determine whether in 1843 or 4, when he was really very deaf, did he write the same way that he did when he had much better hearing? Did he use the bass more because it vibrated more? Or, you know, what did he do? So that really got me into thinking about vibration and what could you do with the kids to help them. And then I had the experience of the cochlear implant, which is the modern hearing aid that supplies sound at a much more a level that you can hear and understand with calling me and telling me that they had listened to a webinar that we did on the radio, and that they heard that we were interested in music and with the cochlear implant and how it would work. And they had done some research and found music to be the best intervention that there was. And they wondered if we would do a review of everybody that we had in the theater from the time they were, like, you know, 6, 7 years old up till now when they asked. They would have been adults in their 30s prior to the implant having come out, because they wanted to know what the music did for them. And we did that, and we had astounding results. It blew me away. I didn't think it would, you know, be so absolutely unbelievable.
Right.
But 89% of all of them had a four-year university degree. Half of them had a master's degree and a PhD. Now we were into the recession, and they were all working in good jobs, had a nice pay. Today, the man that runs the whole association in deafness and is the person who advocates in Congress for them, he was the little guard in The Wizard of Oz and grew up in our theater, too.
Oh, wow.
He became a lawyer, if you would.
Wow.
So it was just a life circle for me of loving music and finding people that had problems, thinking maybe I could give them a little enjoyment with the music by making it be percussive instruments, but also adding color and movement and things like that, finding they adored it, they loved it. And we went into dance then and set up a dance program too.
Wow.
So it's been a wonderful, wonderful career. And, you know, you watch the kids and how they change and what they go out and do, and nothing could be more satisfying.
Absolutely. And, I mean, like I said, too, it's incredible to hear you talk about it. You know, just knowing the great things that that all of the organizations that you've been a part of now, that you've founded, really. I mean, this is more than just being a part of. This is your entire life. This is your everything that you are. You've put into these organizations, and it's incredible to hear how successful. You know, like I said, people that, you know, otherwise are shunned upon with their mental disabilities or their challenges that they're facing. It's incredible, and it's an honor to actually be speaking with you now about how successful it is, because it's a true story of strength and just overcoming the odds.
Well, thank you. The last thing that we have done, and it's only been open maybe 2 months, was going back to the brain and the waves and that neuroscientist that I wanted. And
yes,
we established another program called the Chicago Brain Institute. And we're doing research to learn more about it. We're doing more interventions and trying out more ideas and things. And we hope we'll be able to contribute that across the world, internationally, to other countries. And we're looking forward to that.
And now, what are you looking for with the Chicago Brain Institute? What are you trying to accomplish? And who can come to you with any sort of struggle that they're seeing here?
Well, the patients that can come are anyone who has a disability, like a reading problem, a math problem, a learning disability, anyone who has a neurological problem, like balance, they can't follow the motor patterns, so they don't write very well, and sometimes that might include they can't do numbers and math very well. So all those people, and then everybody's been reading about the sports and the concussions with football and all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Those people also are eligible for service and help through that. So we're very proud of this, and we have the neuroscientist that I was introduced to about 5 years ago in that wonderful dinner that we had. Came and joined our organization and is here working with us. we have a neurologist, we have a psychiatrist, we have a clinical psychologist that are doing a lot of different kinds of testing.
Mm-hmm.
So an IT person, it's been a great experience, and we're just at the beginning. But one of the things we really want to do is in doing these scans, we are organizing them so that we know if deafness creates a certain pattern in the brain,
mm-hmm.
we know what we should be looking for if that person is functioning like a deaf person. And there's not much information out there about groups of people and their own pattern that they would show brain-wise due to whatever is idiosyncratic about them.
Right.
So that's the research part of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to get the group that we know in Croatia so well now. And they are leaders of the medical school in the university, the capital of Zagreb. And they've got a building dedicated to them. And they're joining us in trying to produce all this data that we need to be able to do the job to the extent that is really possible.
Wow. And so I have to ask, I mean, I know that the Chicago Brain Institute now, this is going to, really just in the initial phase of things, is what I'm gathering?
Yeah, we opened the doors and started dragging in the furniture, you know, and setting things up in
right.
January. But
okay.
We've got our first patients about 3 weeks ago.
Wow, okay, great. And
so it's really new.
Absolutely. And so in terms of grand scheme, what do you have planned? And particularly, I would say, for any one of the organizations that you're a part of, what do you have planned for them? What do you hope to see occur over the next, 5 to 10 years, I would say?
Okay, well, it's a plan of integration, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We've got the arts group, and we know already that arts, in a certain way, is very beneficial to any living creature. Do you know that they've never found anybody stranded in a jungle or on an island or whatever, a group of people that didn't make up their own music, as far back in history as you can go? So it's like music is an integral part of a human being.
Sure.
And so that we want to foster that to the fullest extent possible and
mm-hmm.
use it for good purposes. So we've got that to work on that. Then we've got the group that has the hospital unit and the houses and the school and so forth. And that the goal is to make a model of how do you do this that people could come and see. So
right.
there would be a model of learning, a model of behavior and how to manage it, and the hospital would certainly have things to share along those lines. So that would be for them. And then there is the actual Brain Institute, which is the place that would diagnose it and that would gather all this data about what does the brain look like when it's doing a certain activity. What
mm-hmm.
do you expect to happen? Are the connections all there? You know, and so forth.
Sure.
Well, they diagnose, the arts comes in and says, here's what we want to do with you. And then they all say, let's go look at the school and see how it's being done so you'll know what to look for in your hometown.
Right.
So that's the big, glorious plan. And I want to write an encyclopedia or a huge book that says the child has a motor problem, cannot
mm-hmm.
hold the pencil properly, and cannot form letters. He is 3 to 6 years old. Here are all the activities you can do with him to help him.
Absolutely.
And so that they could go and just look it up, and they're not so complicated that they can't do it. So
well,
I think that would be a wonderful gift.
It certainly would. Patricia, unfortunately, we are running out of time for this half hour. I do want to thank you, though, for coming on to the show. Very quickly, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Well, we have a website, the International Center on Deafness and the Arts .org, or mentalhealthanddeafness.org, or chicagobraininstitute.org. So you
Perfect.
Can see all three, and they all have points of contact. I'm always available at any time. They could call here, and we look for people to help us. Any way that they can help us, it would be a wonderful thing.
Well, I thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. And, Patricia, I hope you do come back on down the road. I'd love to talk with you again and see how everything's going. Again, it was a pleasure speaking with you today. And from everyone here at CMC Radio, I want to thank you and thank all of our listeners. And we will see you soon. Take care, everybody.
Okay. Thank you for inviting me. It was fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.